Welcome to Life 2.0 Podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Make sense out of the senseless. If at all possible, find the obvious, bear to the absurd. Hold on to your lug nuts, kids. Time for an overall. Let's do it. Glad to have you with me one more time from anywhere and everywhere around planet Earth. Full disclosure right out of the gate, this is my third start of the show, my third open attempt. I am driving the vintage trusty dusty Dell this morning. And the reason for that is on Fridays, I produce a podcast for the wonderful and incredible Candace Jordan. And for some reason, when I got the new computer, I am unable to access the Podbean platform where all this gets parked. Try that three times in a row before you had a lot of coffee. Podbean platform and parked. And so I have to use this computer, which is kind of like having coffee with an old friend. And first of all, you know, when I bought this new thing, it's just astonishing. It's just like nothing to it. It's just, it doesn't weigh a pound probably. I open up the bag, the travel bag that the old trusty Dusty Dell sits in most of the time. And it's like 47 pounds. It's a big cumbersome thing, you know. It's like trying to back an old 98 out of the garage that's been sitting for a while. The second thing is I kind of bounce around in my head when I do this is the keyboards are not the same. Now, everything's where it's supposed to be, they're replicated that way, but they're offset. So the old Dell has far more room underneath the keyboard than the new one. And so my hands are not used to where the letters are and the keys are. And so you should see this shit I've been writing when I'm trying to remember and readjust where my fingers and my, you know, my hands sit on this old computer. And I've used it for 13 years. It shows me how quickly, you know, we unadapt to things and then how quickly we have to readapt to things sometimes in life. So I was almost tempted to open the new computer. I thought, no, this is my old pal. Been spent a lot of time together over years. Wrote a lot of books together. A ton of audio together. I'm going to give it some time this morning. So I'm on that. And then, of course, for whatever reason, the audio system's a little bit different on the old computer. And I really have to watch it. So the levels that I keep for the new computer, if I put them on this one, this is what you'd hear. Rah, 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 rah. I don't need that. You don't need that. We don't need that. So I had to readjust all that. So hence, this is the third starting gate, out of the starting gate, I should say, attempt at this show. So glad to have you joining me. Got some interesting things coming up, because I always find some interesting things that I'm like, wow, that's just really cool. And we'll get to that in a little bit here. But I was thinking about the show that I did last Saturday before the solar eclipse. And once again, you know, a lot of takeaways for me on that whole event. And the first one is, this is not my first rodeo with an eclipse, and probably most of you have seen lunar eclipses before and solar eclipses and all kind of eclipses. My first thing I thought of was, years ago, I wish I had the stationery somewhere, I probably do in a box. I've had a lot of lives in the audio business, the radio business, the print business, and speaking business, and all kind of businesses. And at one time, for about 4 years, I had Eclipse Broadcasting. It was the coolest logo you'd ever seen. I had a woman design it for me. It was literally like the eclipse, right? And it was about eclipsing your best, like going past what was already known. So that was the whole thing behind it. So as I pulled out my chair in the yard to watch the solar eclipse, I started thinking, I wonder where's that stationery at? Where's that logo at? It was very, very close. So proud of it back then. Got to find that somewhere. And I plunked myself down. And I got the glasses on. Now, the glasses are the same ones I had in 2017. I don't remember where I got them, but they're a little beat up, but that's okay. I'm thinking they're going to work, right? If not, I'll just bag it and tag it and just sit here and look from inside the highly vaunted, respected Aurora Media Studios and just watch the yard change. So they worked. I'm sitting out there. You know, I don't sit still real well sometimes, and I'm thinking, okay, how long is this going to take? How long is it before the celestial bodies line up? And it didn't take too long. And it was interesting how it got like cooler instantly. The yard just cooled right off. It was a really nice day here in Chicago, and the yard cooled right off. I was wearing shorts that day, which is not unusual for me. Once it get past, I don't know, February, I'm in shorts, if I can all possibly do that. And it got real cool, and then the birds stopped singing. And that usually doesn't happen unless there's an intruder in the yard. Then they just take off or they're quiet. The squirrels, on the other hand, you know, they ring the squirrel bell whenever the stray cats come in the yard looking for something. But it just was eerily quiet. There wasn't even a lot of traffic close by. Like, people were pulling over to see this. And it was something. It was very humbling to me. You know, I just think there are things, not everything has to be electronic. Not everything has to be technology. It's not the world we live in today is so driven by those things we've created. To see something that we've had nothing to do with, and it's been going on for billions of years, I think is like, yeah, that's just kind of puts you in your place, at least did for me. It's like, you know, not so much. You know, I think we confuse having a lot with knowing a lot. And we only know as much as we know. And unfortunately, a lot of people never really go past that stage to find out more about life. But the bottom line was, like, here's this event that's been taking place. Doesn't care if we watch or not. It just still happens. And then, of course, I thought about what was going on behind that. What was the other planets in the solar system doing? What were they all up to when this was going on? And then I had this other thought, and I'm claiming it here today. So if somebody else writes this, you're in big trouble, because I already started it. I already got it copyrighted. Whether I finish it or not, we'll see. You imagine this movie where, you know, everybody's getting ready for the solar eclipse, and just like it happened here, you know, people are leaving work and they're pulling their cars over. Some old guy sitting in his yard like me, getting ready to watch. He's got his beers out, and all the meteorologists are getting worked up for it, and the media is getting worked up for it. And it happens. It gets right to about 90%, and it stops. And it doesn't move any further. It doesn't have the path of totality in congruity. It just stops right there. Can you imagine the chaos that would ensue from that happening, good and bad? And it reminded me, when I had that thought, about what the ancient peoples must have thought about all this before you had to go buy those silly glasses, like 3D glasses, from watching Creature of the Black Lagoon back in 19, never mind what year. But what they must have thought, without all this technology, and here's what's happening, that this was this event taking place. And you can obviously see how beliefs would come out of something like that scared the shit out of them, for sure. They didn't know if it was going to come back. They didn't know what was going to happen. But all of a sudden, there was this shadow over the land. And it got cooler back then. And the birds stopped singing back then. And nobody back then knew if it was going to reverse itself, if it was going to change. So I'm sure there was this huge sigh of relief. Let's go back 1,000 years, where we didn't have all we have today and the wherewithal and the know-how about what's actually happening. And this would be, what's going on there up in the sky? And it stops. And then eventually, for the people back then, of course, the earth warmed itself again. And, you know, it's not lost on me that without the sun doing what it does, we're pretty much up shit creek. And the tenuous balance that we have no control over between the sun and the ozone layer that protects the earth, and how all of it works in perfect balance, is really effing important. And when we start messing around with things we don't fully understand, things happen that are not for the good. And so while this is Earth Month, April, ideas and thoughts are going through my head, that everything, I'm looking out in my yard right now, everything's coming alive, the spring is here, and everything's greening up, and the flowers are opening. And how important it is, this system that we depend on for our very lives. It's literally our life support system. You know, years ago, I found some images from 2018 or 19, I think it was. Bill Curtis and I did an event at Northeastern Illinois University called Earth Matters. And it's based on the long-running series that he and I did. Let me play one for you, and then I'll pick it up after that.
Over the past 150 years, one animal has had more of a negative impact on the planet than any other. From the Exxon oil spill in Alaska that bled 32 million gallons of crude oil into Prince William Sound, forever changing the landscape, to the 233,000 gallons of molasses that burst from a pipe and turned Honolulu Harbor into a wasteland, human error has played havoc with the environment. Even with government policies in place, they are often ignored because the fines for violation are less than the cost of making ships safer or holding tanks for toxic waste more secure, as was the case in a recent spill in West Virginia. In every case, the cost long-term for cleaning up after a spill is far more than if the safeguards were put in place in the beginning. By the way, the Exxon Valdez spill was the 54th largest in history. Not even in the top 20. I'm Bill Curtis, and Earth Matters.
So, as I've mentioned before, we worked on a project as a tag team. It's just a pleasure to work with Bill. He's obviously the consummate pro and all that stuff. And to have that process where I would research something, and then I would write the script and then hand it off to him, and we'd go to Curtis Productions, and he would go in the studio there, and it was really cool because he's got this whole huge office area, and you walk in the back, there's a studio, and you can go in the booth there and do these. To hear it come alive from a thought that I had was very cool, even so these years later. But we did this event based on that program, and I had taken, I suppose, about a half a dozen of those Earth Matters vignettes, short-form programs that were aired on the radio, and I converted them into videos. So now I'm a video producer, apparently. So to take the audio and then match it up with video was very, very powerful. So we did this Earth Matters event. It was really, as I mentioned, a tag team effort. So I'm far more of a podium pounder than he is. He's obviously more buttoned down and more scientific, and I tend to get worked up and get going and all that kind of stuff. So it works out well. And kind of thunder and lightning kind of thing. I don't know who's who yet. But anyway, I think he must be the lightning. I would be the thunder. So I started out the program. And, it was well attended, a lot of familiar faces in the audience, a lot of people that I didn't know, but I started this thing out talking about that particular one, about we're responsible for this shit. And the fact that people think that we're not, or we can get away with it, that's not the case. So it is as Chief Seattle once said, contaminate your bed, one night you suffocate in your own waste. And it may take years for that to catch up to you, but it happens. We lived in a closed biosphere. I learned it in fifth grade. What happens here stays here. It doesn't go floating off into space. We're in a biosphere. It all stays inside. It's like a big aquarium, except it's round. So with all that in mind, I'm talking about this Earth stuff, and we did this event. And I did the videos, then BK came up and had some great stuff about tall grass prairie that can offset the nitrogen and all the scientific stuff he does. And afterwards, a guy came up that I'd known for a very long time, who was more on the right side of the political scale than on the left side, which is neither good nor bad, but that's just something that I know. And he would always deflect this stuff. He would always just say, that can't happen, or, we can't save the Earth because it's not about, all the things that just kind of these deflecting phrases about stuff. But something changed there. And I think it had to do with the two-punch approach. So you got the videos, you got the audio, and then here's some scientific stuff. And these are things that you could do today, should you choose to do that. And he came up and he says, I got to tell you, he said, I came here fully prepared to refute all this stuff and to just push it away. And he said, all of a sudden, it made sense. And I go back to what I just aired with this one with about the human error. And you have to admit those things. I mean, you don't have to, but an adult would, a mature person would, and to say that we have affected this planet in ways that had never been done before the Industrial Revolution. It's just the way it is. Whenever I do these shows and talk about this, people tend to send me emails or text messages and Facebook messages saying, yeah, but there's been climate change since the beginning. Yeah, that's true. I'm not going to say it's not true. And there were no humans when all this happened. That's true too. But we're inducing the climate change this time. We're the ones that are actually changing the way things are because of what we've pumped into the air and taken out of the land and put into the water. That's never happened. There's never been 8 billion people on this planet like there are today. So when you go back and look at those natural changes that occurred, sorry kids, science class is in session. When you go back over time and look at the natural occurring rhythms that the Earth has gone through, those are really important and they last a very long time. Ice ages and searing heat and finding its core and figuring itself out, trying to balance itself. And until we came along, there was no such thing as pollution. Nothing. There was none. Not humans, for sure. Not created by humans, because there was no humans. So when you look at the last 150 to 200 years, and you see the spikes and changes in temperature, you'd have to say, an adult, a mature person would say, what's causing that? And then we would have to look at the overabundance and the offshoot and the waste products of the Industrial Revolution. Or not. So these days, I just throw it out there. I used to kind of get into some debates with people. What about this? But you realize people don't want to see things. It's just the way it is. They'd rather be right than happy. Or stick with what they think they know as opposed to what can be known. You know, I've taken a measure of pride in standing a little bit more upright over the last few years than I did in my early years. I've always kind of seen myself as a part of the evolutionary puzzle. Knuckle dragger for sure. But at some point, when you're tired of your knuckles getting scraped, you start to stand up a little taller. And reading has done that for me. And self-improvement classes have done that for me. And certainly influences in the world that I used to dismiss, I started to accept. And I think for sure, these two near-life experiences, a lot of people call them near-death experiences, but these near-life experiences that almost took me out, basically they did, and I still get to be here. I see things very differently than I used to. That's the whole idea. So let's not wait until you get electrocuted at the age of 19 to go, hey, wait a minute, there's something else going on? I don't know everything? Yeah. So I say all that in back to this eclipse thing, and that we have no idea what's going on, really. We only have a small idea of what's going on. You know, Tom Skilling, who's been on the show a couple times, the great meteorologist who retired not long ago, I always found it interesting that people would, I mean, literally clamor over themselves when I was on WGN to talk to this guy about what the weather's going to be like when they go on vacation and trust him implicitly. And then when he started to come out and change his mind about climate change and say, well, I think there's things going on here that I didn't see before. People are like, oh, no. We can't have Tom doing that. I'm saying if you're going to trust him with the frickin' vacation for your weather, you might want to listen to a trained meteorologist talking about climate change. Just a thought. Going in a 180-degree direction now, John McEwen is a legend, really, in American music. This guy is a founding member of the great Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, which I've enjoyed them over the years. I mean, he's known Steve Martin since they were in high school. And when you see Steve Martin play the banjo, he's world class. A lot of that has to do with John McEwen. You know, I'm just enamored for some reason with banjos. I don't know what it is. I don't know. Must have been, well, maybe it was the Jed Clampett thing, right? Maybe that was the first time I can remember actually hearing banjo music on television. And it stayed with me all this time. So I thought before I get into this a little bit more, we'll do a little bit of that.
Thank you.
Not too bad, huh? So that's John McCune and the boys cranking out the Ballad of Jed Clampett. One of his earliest influences were the Dillards. And you all know the Dillards because the Dillards were the Darlins on the Andy Griffith Show. So you remember that whole group of guys led by Briscoe T. Darlin was the head guy, and it was the great late actor Denver Pyle. He was also in Grizzly Adams and a bunch. He was Uncle Jesse in the Dukes of Hazzard. Denver Pyle was Briscoe T. Darlin, and he had the Darlins. The boys were all there. They never talked. They just played their instruments. Big influence on John McEwen. And the reason I bring all this up, he has a new album out. It is called The Newsman, Man of Record. And this project for John was an album that has 10 spoken word tracks and one instrumental piece. Each one tells a special story in a way that's like a play of sorts, with his own style of music in the background. And the album starts with a story about a newspaper seller. This true story, newspaper seller who had a big impact on John when he was getting started in Los Angeles back in the day, and goes all the way around and ends with a cut called Jules Theme about Jules Verne, talking about his wife who passed away in a French cemetery, and everything you can imagine in between. So last August, Brian Smith, who is a manager to the Stars, takes care of John Barry and John McEwen and a bunch of other country artists and bluegrass artists, he reached out and said, hey, I want you to hear something because of all the work you do in audio. And I was fascinated with these spoken word tracks by John McEwen. Now, you're going to hear one of them in just a minute, but John's voice, he is like right out of the Old West, man. I mean, this guy's from 1886 somewhere, coming down from the mountains with the big beard and the hair and a banjo, and he's telling these stories, and I got goose pimples. It takes a lot for me to get moved that way. I'm like, wait. So I call Brian, and in short order, the three of us, John and I and Brian, had a conversation, and I could have sworn that I had a recording of that somewhere because some of it was just pure gold. It's not on my old computer. It's not on my new computer. I did a lot of digging. I had to let that go. And in lieu of that, I grabbed this one track for a very, very special reason. It's about Vietnam. My cousin, who's more like my older brother, the Sarge, did two tours in Vietnam. I've told this before, I'm going to tell it again. 10 years old, he's in Vietnam, a place I'd never heard before. Most of us had never heard of before. I had this big map on the wall in my room, and he would send me letters whenever he could, postcards, what have you, and I would try to track his movements. Then they were 2-3 months behind. And I remember him coming home on leave one time and sitting in the kitchen while we're having breakfast before we went to school, and he's pulling shrapnel out of his leg with a long-nosed pair of pliers. My dad thought, wait, what? So when I heard, I went through all the tracks, and when I heard this one, I think, I got to play this for Rich. And I also have to play it for all the men and the women who served there and for the ones that came home and the ones that did not. So this is off John McEwen's latest project called The Newsman, and this is for all the Vietnam vets that are listening.
We were just boys on the flight to the fight, expected to act like men. The sun was setting as the chopper sat down at the foot of the rock called Nui Ba Den. The mountain loomed over as we ran for cover. They shelled us, and by the rocket's red glare, we crouched in the night, concealing our fright. But the veterans seemed not to care. They said, you can just bet, boy, that they're dug in on that hill we call Ba Den. They're ready to give you a welcoming show. You'll learn rather soon to make the monsoon. The first rule is keep your head low. I was just a country boy with a big old country grin. But they handed me a gun one day and said, do your best to stay alive, but you don't have to win. They were dug in on the hill called Ba Den, and they gave us a welcoming show. We learned rather soon that to make the monsoon, the first rule, keep your head low. through the next 12 months, rice paddies and swamps, we boys grew into men. We showed our style, and we took that hill called Ba Den. During the night, the enemy warned, I'm sure they warned their new men, you can just bet that they are dug in on the hill that we call Ba Den, and they're ready to give you a welcoming show. You'll learn rather soon to make the monsoon. The first rule is keep your head low, though it's been years. I can't shake the fears, the nightmares, the dying men. I awake in the night, still poised for the fight. I pray, Lord, will these echoes, these voices ever end? Will I find peace? Will I find release from the nightmare that we and the enemy called Ba Den? 'Cause we both were dug in on that hill called Ba Den. We gave each other welcoming shows. We learned rather soon, we that made the monsoon. The first rule is keep your head low. Yeah, the first rule is keep your head low. We were just boys on the flight to the fight. Expected to act like men. We were just boys on that flight to the fight. Expected to act like men.
Thomas Monroe wrote that story while he was in Vietnam about New Ba Den and sent it to his brother here in America. He came back from the war, only to pass away years later, not enough years, from, quote, remnants of Agent Orange, according to his brother, who sent this really tough story to tell to John McEwen 10 years after his brother had passed. And it sat all this time, and then you just heard what this man wrote when he was there. The power in something like that goes beyond any kind of, you know, how we doing with sales and who's promoting it. I'm so proud to help this along because of these cuts, because of John McEwen's ability to bring a story like that forth. Anyway, it's a great piece of work by John. You know, he's known all over the world as the banjo guy, and you know, Will the Circle Be Unbroken and Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, all the other work he's done. But this was so different that I literally had to sit and listen to all this stuff 4, 5, 6, 7 times to hear the nuances. You know, as a production rat, I'm always listening for stuff. And I thought, he must have did 40, 50 takes to get it this way. Well, most of these are one, he's a one-cut kid. There's a few of those in the business. So I highly recommend, if you want to have something a little bit different in your repertoire, you can order a signed CD for $20 that John's already signed a bunch. They got t-shirts and all kind of things like that. But go to John McEwen, McEwen.net, and go to the shop page, and everything's there. All the stuff he has is there. And you know, in this day and age, where everything is over technical and over the top and all the rest of it that goes along with it, to have a guy sit there and just talk, not unlike what I'm doing now, except I don't have a banjo in my hand, which may happen at some point. You know, I don't know where this banjo thing came from me. It might have been the Dillards for all I know. And there's been a couple times in the past, and if McEwen hears this, he's going to be calling me like, all right, start taking lessons. But years ago, I did an event called Songs in the Key of Life. And it was a combination of the spoken word, which is me, and the music, which was my highly talented guests. And we raised a lot of money for a lot of people over the years. Probably did this 5, 6 years. And a couple times, I pulled out the banjo because my pal Dave Stoddard was always pushing me. He's like, if you can just learn the banjo piece on Dueling Banjos, I'll take care of the guitar. I don't know which one's easier or harder, but it never really happened. But we did have it out, and I used it as a prop a few times, and it just felt like it was supposed to be my hands. We'll see. Anyway, johnmcewen.net. You can find all his stuff there. It's a great piece of work. And, you know, I got to find that other audio. It bothers the you-know-what out of me because my brain says, it's there somewhere, John. Keep digging. And it might not be. Could just be a ghost passing through my brain. Who knows? Getting ready to wrap this one up today. More music ahead because I can. It's my show. I can do whatever I want. As I've said before, I only play stuff in here when I have permission. So I called Mr. Smith yesterday and said, good to go. He says, good to go. And there you go with John McEwen. And again, it's johnmcewen.net where you can find all that. Phil Lynch is a guy that I met when I lived in my second home in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan for many, many years. Phil was a high school teacher in the bustling metropolis of Escanaba. And a couple of times I spoke at his class. I don't know how that all transpired, except I was on the radio and he asked me to come over and I said, sure. And then you take the radio guy out from behind the microphone on the radio and you stick him in classrooms. And I've done, I don't know how many commencements and all those type of things. And we've stayed in touch on and off over the years. And last summer, when I was getting ready to launch the Randy Hundley book, which, by the way, is still for sale. You don't have a copy? What's wrong with you? Baseball's on. I stayed up last night because the Cubs are playing the Seattle Mariners. They lost 4-2. I stayed up till like, I don't know, 11:15, which is late for me these days, to watch the baseball game. It's all back, so it's time to do this. And you can find the Hundley book, Iron Man, at lulu.com. And just put Iron Man in the search bar, and you could go ahead and spend $19.99, and Randy and I will kindly thank you. So last year when that was all happening, Phil Lynch writes a song about Randy Hundley in the book. It was fascinating to me. These are the offshoots of things that you could never predict, right? So you're working on a book, and it's a year and a half of work, and the book's coming out, and here's a guy who decides he's going to write a song about Randy Hundley. And it's beautiful. And I send it over to his daughters. And they're crying. And I played it for Randy. He's crying. And then we're all crying together. Like, this is the fantastic thing. And then on top of that, I asked Phil Lynch to come down to the Randy Hundley book signing last September from Upper Michigan. And it turned out he had a couple of concerts in the Chicago area. So it worked out. And Phil and his delightful wife, Jane, came to the event. And Phil sang the song live in front of Randy, who's got tears streaming down his eyes, man. Fantastic stuff. So about a week ago, I get an email from Phil. And it basically says, hey, John, I got something else for you. So I get this email from Phil and basically says this. Until this year, I did not know there is a very large decentralized movement out there in the world about civility. Learning how to disagree better, civic wellness, etc. Hundreds of groups and organizations across the land. And he goes on to say that, you know, I'm really a part of this, meaning me, even though I probably haven't thought about it, doing it consciously. And all the research shows that we're not nearly as divided as the powerful forces on the edges would have us believe, which you probably knew, haha, yes, I do. And he sent me this MP3. And I listened to it. 3 or 4 or 5 times, and I thought, here's this guy. Here we go again. You know, John McEwen's doing it his way, and Phil Lynch is doing it his way, and David Stoddard's doing it his way, and Kathy Bolton's doing it her way, because it's all music. And music, as Charlie Daniels says, you can disagree on everything, but get those 12 notes together, and we could agree. And I think he was right. So I'm going to play this on the way out. I think it's really, really important what he has done here. And it does underscore something I've been talking about since 1997. That, come on, folks, this is the best we can do? Really? Here we are again? We're going to play the game of tug of war again? Full well knowing that no matter how you voted or how, you know, one side or the other you are for this, when it comes to the end of your days and everybody gathers to say goodbye to you, nobody's going to give a shit. Not a single cemetery has a single friggin' headstone that has your voting record on there or whether you were a Democrat, Republican, or other. It has brother, father, sister, mother, auntie, uncle, veteran, and beloved. Those are the things to be focused on. And it's going to get more difficult as time goes on. I get that. And there's great forces wanting to pull things apart, and they will, because they always have. But somewhere in the middle is the real power of life. I tell my kids all the time, I say, you know, the best way to win the battle of tug of war is put the rope down. Let them go flying off. Remember, it'd be pull, 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 pull. You let go of the rope, they go flying. Metaphorically and literally. This is really cool. I just saw this now as I was going through Phil's email to wrap up this show. He says, hey, let me know if you need any more or when you might post an episode with the song, which is today. I've already let him know that. And the quote at the bottom of this page, get a frickin' load of this. How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. Annie Dillard. I have no idea if she's related to the Dillards I've been talking about, the same Dillards that influenced John McEwen, nor do I care. The name's the same. Good enough for me. So here's Phil Lynch to take it home. Until next time, be well. Safe travels. Keep the faith.
It's so exhausting. Do I have to hear one more person shouting? Sometimes the news is just another bad reality show. And you know it's all just meant to divide us. It's always an argument. I can mute them, but I know just what they're saying. I'm so right, the other side's so wrong. It's the same old song, it won't unite us. I know we'll never all agree on everything we see down to the letter. But maybe we could disagree better. If we listen first, really listen, take some time and think it over just a little. Maybe we could even meet in the middle if we try. If we listen first, I could feel what you're feeling. Look into your eyes, see another human being. Maybe even see the good and not the worst. If we listen first. And social media, whoever named it that has got a sense of humor. We made our points already back in 2019, but the dopamine is hard to walk away from. I love some people, yes I do, but online it's like another person talking. Snoozing's not the answer, there'd be nobody left, and we'd forget to feel the common clay we're made from. I know we'll never all agree on everything we see down to the letter. But maybe we could disagree better. If we listen first, really listen, take some time and think it over just a little. Maybe we can even meet in the middle if we try. If we listen first, I can feel what you're feeling. Look into your eyes, see another human being. Maybe even see the good and not the worst. If we listen first. We're the boy in the bubble, we're in trouble as we double down and only hear what we already think. Is the bridge really broken? Is the door a little open? Can we all be a little less outspoken? I know we'll never all agree on everything we see down to the letter. But maybe we could disagree better. Maybe even come together if we would. Listen first, really listen. Take some time and think it over just a little. And maybe we can even meet in the middle if we try. If we listen first, I can feel what you're feeling. Look into your eyes, see another human being. Maybe even see the good and not the worst. Say it again. Maybe even see the good. And not the worst if we listen. really hear what we've been missing. If we listen first.